all the credit goes to everybody else that's on the show. I just do the technical stuff. So,
you know, it's funny. That's how I feel too. You know, like when I'm hanging out with Chad and Peyton, it's really easy. You know, it's just,
Peyton,
like, did you notice how similar you and I, hanging out on Sunday was to this show?
Yeah, we didn't look at each other at all. We just stayed in separate rooms, Chad. It was fun.
Stay on the opposite ends of the couch. You know, I don't want to get too close.
Oh, that's awesome. And that's what you should open the episode with.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 10. 10! Double digits! Recorded live, in theory, on Wednesday, February 29th, 2012. I should be Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com. To what should be my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com, if he exists. Peyton, how are you doing tonight?
Good day, mate. I'm all right.
Nice. No fear. No fear. And to my other hypothetical right is not Mr. Chad Merland. Chad is not able to come with us this week on our ride to the Citadel Cafe. Instead, we have a friend of mine, Mr. Brian Provo.
Provo or Provost? Okay. You can go either way.
All right. I'm the Canadian, and the French Canadian in me says Provost.
That's cool because I'm actually French Canadian, so my heritage and everything.
Very cool. Well, Brian, welcome to the show. How's your week going so far?
It's going good. It's going good. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad I was able to stop in and hang out with you guys for a while.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's not that I'm not going to miss Chad terribly. You know, my heart will bleed. my horse heart will bleed, actually.
Your horse heart.
For Chad. But he had emailed me earlier to say, you know, have a good show and all that kind of stuff. And but I'm excited to have a little bit of a change of pace here on the show and have a different perspective on some of the things to come. And the reason why I'm all weird with the intro this week is because it's February 29th.
Yes.
Like this, yeah, does this day really exist? Will we look back 4 years from now and be in like a time warp or some sort of strange, you know, leap year, as it were?
Yeah, there was a kid growing up who was born on February 29th, so I think he's now 7.
Nice. That's awesome. Oh, man. Well, if anybody out there listening is new to the Citadel Cafe, as Brian is new to co-hosting, what we do is basically break down all the cool sci-fi geeky stuff that we're into. We do gravitate towards the sci-fi fantasy side of things, but if it's anything like a book or a TV show or a podcast or anything like that, we will let you know what we think, good or bad. So I wanted to take a minute here and just give Brian a chance to tell everybody a little bit about himself. So you had mentioned a little bit in the pre-show there when you're talking to Peyton, Brian, but what is it that you do, and what is it on the internet that you do?
Sure. Well, my day job is I'm an IT manager and a customer service supervisor. It's a dual role that I do in a small call center. My customer service staff is only 5 people, but I'm the IT manager for a building of 25, give or take. Including telecommuters and all that kind of stuff. So do the IT thing and customer service by day, and by night I play video games and watch TV, and I'm a complete geek.
Nice.
Yeah, and, go ahead.
It was and a fellow podcaster, which is how we met.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's just a brand new adventure that I started on with Rob Wynn and Nick Nizzi and Trisha Tevenot from the Tadpool on the Frog Pants Network. We started chatting it up early last year, and it finally came to fruition, and we've put in 15 episodes so far. So
fantastic.
So far, so good. Cool. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's a fun ride.
Yeah, and it is a fun ride, isn't it? I mean, and you're a few episodes ahead of us, but still a relatively, young podcast compared to a lot of the other shows that are out there. So it's nice when you can start networking with other people that are in podcasting but are also at your level, as opposed to it's nice to talk to the people that have been in it for a while, but it's you find that you can troubleshoot more problems local to you when you're dealing with how do I fix this mic or how do I set the mixer to do what I want it to do, and you talk to somebody that's at the same same level saying like, oh my god, I had that problem last week, I could totally help you out.
It's great, and it's a good way to learn too. I mean, just looking at the show notes for this episode of the Citadel Cafe, your notes are very, very detailed, and that just blew my mind. Because usually what I send out to the people on our show is just quick little blurb, here's what we're doing, and we just kind of do it off the cuff.
Right.
And this is totally making me rethink how to better evolve that podcast on a weekly basis.
Right on.
Well, so. I really appreciate Joel's setting this up because it really helps to keep our show under 3 hours. You get on a tangent, sure. And rant, you're like, "Oh, where are we? Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay."
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Well, and yeah. The thing with the show notes too is that I mean these are kind of an expanded version of what I used to put together for the Dating Digital podcast, which was my first full show. And that show gradually, you know, went from 25 to 30 minutes. Now it's up to about 45 to 50 because we do it once a month. And to keep that organized, I have the show notes out. And one of the things that I think is key about organizing the show is I have the show notes ready a full week ahead of time. So there, it's an empty template, but it's there. So as people watch something or see something cool, they can always just pop into the Google Doc, throw it down quick. And then that way when, you know, Tuesday rolls around and it's time to go read them, it's all there. It's all populated. It's not like it takes a long time, you know?
Right.
It's just
right.
Something that happens really smoothly.
Yeah. And that's something I've been kicking around too. I mean, the whole structure of Tadpoolery, for any of your listeners that may not be familiar with it, Tadpoolery is based off of the Frog Pants Network chat room, which is called the Tadpool. And we're all in there. A lot of us are in there all day long, every day of the week, and even on the weekends, just hanging out and having conversations. You know, even when there's not a live show being done, we're in there just spending time together. And we've grown these wonderful relationships throughout the last year of TMS. That's when it really started to build to where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured, why don't we move that conversation to a different atmosphere and do a podcast and kind of get to know the people behind the chat name, you know? So for example, Boba Fettish, Nigel Cox, he was on our show a couple episodes ago. So we got to spend some time talking to him and get to know him more outside of that chat environment. And it's a really great way of connecting with people.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I really like the Tadpool too. I'm relatively new. I've been listening to Frog Pants shows for quite a while, but I'm new to the being a little bit more vocal in the community.
Sure.
So I'm experiencing that on Friday mornings when I do the Alpha Geek Radio Fridays with Todd Whitehead from Versus the World Productions, which is actually where Tadpoolery is housed.
Absolutely, yeah. Todd's the one that actually got us started. He heard from Trisha that we were kicking around this idea, and he sent me an email and said, "Hey, if you guys want to give it a go, put it on VTW and let's see what you can do."
That's great.
And
yeah.
And it's been there. So, I mean, I can't thank him enough for going out of his way just to give us rookies a shot at putting a podcast out on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, he's also nice enough to also put the Dating Digital podcast as well as the Citadel Cafe out on the Shoutcast network. So
yeah.
we're on a 24/7 rotation with all the other really cool content that's on there. So I'm really, really thankful for that, which is, you know, just more exposure. So hello, VTW people. Always appreciate your ear holes, as it were. Before we get too carried away with the show, I do want to mention something that I'm going to do in post, which is I'm going to put a little tease at the beginning of the episode, and it's the hat for poop.
Yes.
And what that is a little video game thing that the Citadel Cafe and the Gamers Inn are going to partake in. That's all I will say. It was a brainchild of Chad and myself and Jocelyn and Ryan, I think. Peyton is kind of along for the ride.
Yeah.
but Chad was nice enough to set up a document, but where he's not here, I don't want to kind of go and try to explain it without him around to correct me as I, you know, flub up repeatedly. So we will launch that the week coming when Chad is back, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But there'll be an explanation in the amusing intro to the show later on. Peyton, what have you been up to this week, sir?
Just this, that, and the other thing. I got myself a new toy. I when my son was born, I ended up borrowing my niece's ukulele. I have no musical talent, no ear for music, nor the dexterity to actually do anything, any proper fingering with the guitars or anything. So, and I tried ukulele for a while there and enjoyed it. And, you know, so I figured I'd go out and I pick one up. So I picked up a $30 ukulele at a local store here, a little Denver ukulele, and I'm going to give that a go. I want to do something that's not work-related, you know?
Yeah, I remember you and I were talking about that. I mean, for everybody out there, Peyton came over the other day and we were hanging out Sunday night, was it?
Sunday night.
Yeah, hanging out Sunday night. And just saying how nice it was to kind of sit down, chat, and not really... We talked about a little bit about work, but for the most part, we were just kind of hanging out. And it's just nice to kind of decompress and do that sometimes.
Yeah, you know, and because, you know, I draw all day at work and, you know, I'm working on getting the webcomic and all that stuff together now as well and, you know, some other stuff. So it's good to do something that's completely unrelated to, you know, visually and try to, you know, mm-hmm. open the other section of your brain. So.
Yeah, it's funny how our hobbies end up being creative hobbies too, though.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like me with podcasting and you with the ukulele with, you know, music and stuff like that. So yeah, it's funny how like the creator just can't stop. It's just like you have to do something that's, you know, a different kind of creation to satisfy the, oh, I'm doing something else, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've tried the sports thing. Like, I used to run track and stuff in high school, but that was like 100 pounds ago. And, you know, and that was fine then, you know, when you weren't destroying your knees. And yeah. I tried basketball at one point, but for like a rec league. But the first game I played, I was... underneath the net, and the guy kind of drove his elbow on the top of my head and split my head open. I'm like, yeah, that's enough of that.
That's a good time to get out.
Yeah, you know, I like sports if it's, you know, it's chess or something, right? So
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, nothing that breaks your face.
Yeah, well, poker's on the sports channel, so that counts, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
It's really funny. Whenever golf comes on, my wife always gets very angry. Golf is not a sport, she says.
Oh, I'll argue with her on that.
It's really quite funny.
Yeah, I used to play golf when I was much younger. Yeah. And well, geez, Matt must get right after her, does he, Peyton?
I don't know if you ever heard her say that. Actually, yeah. we all went on for a Matt stag party sort of thing. A friend of ours recently, he's a gym teacher, and he got married last summer. We went on a stag party, which involved going out and playing golf. And a friend of his best man had an extra set of clubs that he ended up handing off to me. And yeah, I'm pretty horrible at that too. So. But it's kind of fun, you know, to be so bad at something and not really caring, especially if you're playing against someone who does care and it just sends them right over the edge. So,
yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Brian, what about you? What's new with you? I haven't really, outside of just setting up the evening tonight to hang out and be on the show, I haven't actually talked to you very much.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy for me for work and everything, you know. But it's interesting that Peyton brings up picking up a ukulele and starting to mess around with it. I've had my bass sitting in this room in my office for well over a year at this point, and I'm just getting the itch to get back to it. You know, I started playing bass in high school, and it was a great way to just zone out, relax. You know, great, excellent stress release after a rough day either at school or at work, that sort of thing. But I ended up just losing sight of it for quite a few years, and now it's starting to creep back up on me again. So gotta make a few changes and get back to playing. I think it's a wonderful hobby because it allows you to just focus on that one thing, you know. And then you can tune out the work stuff that you had to deal with all day. Rocksmith put out the I don't know if you guys saw it, they put out the video game where it's like Rock Band, but it uses a real guitar. An actual six-string guitar that you can plug into your computer, you can plug it into your Xbox 360, or you can plug it into your PlayStation, and play along with the music in a similar Rock Band / Guitar Hero format. But you're actually playing real chords, and the video game is actually turning your entertainment system into your amp. So the music you're playing on your guitar is actually going through the system, through the video game console, and then into your audio system, so you're hearing exactly what you're playing during that track.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a really cool inventive idea, and there's a lot of music teachers that have been reviewing it, and they're absolutely in love with it because it's teaching their students the proper way to play a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm hoping that they're going to put out the bass guitar add-on content sooner rather than later, so that I can get in on a little bit of that action.
Right on.
Yeah, kind of fun. They probably expand to a piano and whatever else too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, in theory. I mean, anything that you can plug into an amplifier, you know, so keyboard would be certainly doable. Bass guitar, any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, look forward to Peyton's debut on the electric ukulele in 2014.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
This was for the ladies.
Yeah, nice.
You'd have to have a YouTube channel just for that, Pete, and it would be awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Brian, I don't know if I told you this. I actually used to play bass guitar as well.
No kidding.
Yeah, no, I started in high school. I had a cover band that I was part of in university. We covered Green Day, The Beatles, and Radiohead.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. OK Computer, Dookie, and any Beatles stuff. We used to get a lot of requests for Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds because we used to kind of do like a Radiohead spin with it.
Okay.
Which is very cool. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I miss it, but at the same time, when I got back to the city and none of my band friends were living in the immediate area, I find being a solo bass player is kind of difficult.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. My friends all ended up joining different bands after high school and moved to different cities, states for college, that sort of thing, and it just kind of deteriorated from there.
Mm.
You know, so I've been out of the loop as far as playing with people, but I still want to get back to the point where I can just pick it up, plug it in, and you know, mess around on my own for a while.
Yeah, I always wanted to learn double bass because I like jazz a lot. Oh,
yeah, same here.
I would love to be able to play a big double bass like the dude from Bare Naked Ladies.
Yes, that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, very, very fun.
That would be really cool.
Right on. Well, if everybody's ready, I say we get into the countdown this week.
Let's do it.
Fantastic. All right, so as we've been doing the last few weeks now, five running, this is the Winter is Coming Countdown episode number 6, A Golden Crown. And this is where we run down the first season of Game of Thrones. And in this episode, the plot depicts a deterioration in the political balance of the Seven Kingdoms, with Eddard Stark having to deal with the Lannister aggressions while King Robert is away on a hunt. On the Eyrie, the Imp is put to trial, and across the Narrow Sea, Viserys Targaryen is determined to force Khal Drogo into making him king. The episode was well received by critics, who praised aspects of both the King's Landing storyline as well as the fatal culmination of Viserys' storyline. Spoiler alert, if you have not watch this episode yet, you need to watch it before you listen to this section. because the show is a year old, we don't really worry too much about spoilers. The only thing we have to worry about usually is Chad's on the show, and he's read far ahead of Peyton and I in the books. So Brian, you're new to the Game of Thrones, I think, are you not?
Yeah, brand new. I actually started watching it about 2 weeks ago and just finished it up last week.
Okay, so you've seen the whole first season.
Yeah, I've seen the whole first season, I'm good. I'm only going to focus on episode 6 tonight. So.
All right, great. Good stuff. Sometimes we let little things slip and we don't want to ruin it for people.
Sure. Yep. No, I totally understand. No, I saw the whole thing.
Right on. All right. Well, while we're talking to you, Brian, what are your thoughts on episode 6? How did you find it?
You know, I liked it. I really like the direction they're going. Having not read the books prior to this, Game of Thrones was completely new for me. I heard Scott Johnson talk about it here and there on a couple of his different podcasts and some other ones that were from, you know, other podcast sources, but never really paid too much attention to it because I didn't have HBO, so I'm not going to get all worked up over it until I could get it on DVD or something like that. I ended up watching it a couple weeks ago, finished it up, and it's phenomenal. I mean, it was just an amazing story, and it gave me goosebumps in the same way Lord of the Rings Extended Edition gave me goosebumps when that was released for the first time. That's right up there for me with Star Wars. So this is doing a very good job of recreating that emotion, you know, and the characters that they're that are being portrayed in the TV series are just mind blowing. You know, they do such a good job with the little details of every character, you know, so you get a good sense of background for each of them as the story's being told.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that you don't need to read the books, but because HBO does such a good job with that.
Yeah, that was my question is, you know, am I missing out on anything by not reading book one and just watching the TV show? But now I'm at the point where it's like, okay, I went and bought book two today, you know, from the Amazon Kindle store, and I'm itching to dive into it because I can't wait for season two to start up.
Yeah, they do stay pretty true to the events of the book in terms of major plot points, in terms of characters living or dying, certain events in terms of wars and battles and big things like that. One of the things that we actually talked about last night, when I say we, Jocelyn and I watched the show together, and the scene where Eddard is flipping through the book, the Heritage book, where mm-hmm. they're talking about everybody's parents and how each kid has got different hair color and or the same hair color, I guess, going through. They really simplified that on the TV series. Probably because they needed to do it in one scene. And I mean, the book obviously goes on for several pages about why that was important. Because the idea was that blonde is a recessive gene. So the only time that you would see a blonde kid is if two blonde people had a kid. That's how he painted it in the book. So you'd see like, you know, a Lannister and a, you know, insert other house here would marry and have children. And the children would always have the other house's hair color. They would never be blonde kids. Mm-hmm. You know, it was only if there was a blonde member of one family and a blonde member of the other that the kid would actually be blonde for a bit. And that's of course when Eddard Stark realizes what's going on and all that. But in the book, he just kind of goes, it just makes it sound like all the houses are incestual. Like it's just, you know, Baratheon.
Oh, yeah.
Stark. Lannister. He doesn't actually say who marries who and how, like.
Yeah, just skipping right through to the firstborn sort of thing.
Yeah, it was just the firstborn, and it was just, there was no partners. It was no, like the errands. It was nothing like that. So it was very simplified. And she thought that it was better explained in the book. And the other thing that was more important and more obvious in the book, too, was the how important that book was, that book of heritage that he has. I can't remember what it's called right now. But it is a there's a moment in episode 2 or 3 when the Maester tells him, like, this is the book that John Arryn was reading just before he passed away. You know? Mm-hmm. And if you miss that, I mean, like, if you talk to your wife for a minute before you when that scene's happening, like, if you miss that little teeny tidbit of information, then it's kind of lost on you what the weight of this book is. But in the book, you're kind of not beaten over the head with it, but there are several really clear points that this book is extremely important, because he doesn't just read it that one night when, you know, like the light bulb goes on. Like, he's pouring through it night after night, and they illustrate that in the book. So it is part of this routine, and Martin is kind of not, like I said, not beating you over the head with it, but he's kind of getting this book into your brain, like, oh yeah, that book. Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. He's reading that book again. Like, and then when it becomes a certain, like a really important plot device, you're like, oh, I know what's going on now. You know?
Right. Yeah. I think when he initially got the book from the old guy, he sort of like, well, he was reading the book and it's, you know, it's really boring. You don't need to worry about that. And then, you know, there was, I think the scene with, you know, with him taking the book and the old guy's reaction to that is all sort of, you know, made it stick in my mind a little more than just a passing moment. So,
yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to step in there.
No, not a problem. I mean, it's good that you explain it in that level of detail, because they lost a bit of that in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was foreshadowed and a little bit too predictable in the TV show. When Bronn was climbing up the side of the castle or the side of the keep, and as he's climbing up, he passes a window, you know, and the queen and her brother are going at it.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, in a pile of hay. And he's like, what? Yeah. And then that's when Bronn gets smashed. You know, it was a little bit too predictable when that happened. It's like, wait a second, those two are brother and sister and they're having fun. What about Prince Joffrey?
Yeah.
You know? So that made it a little predictable for me, but your further detail connects the dots.
Right. And there's also a lot of detail in how bad incest actually is. Like, you kind of get like expelled and banned and your land and titles are taken away. Like, there's all this kind of stuff.
So the pressure you get is sort of, especially, yeah, I thought it was a little more acceptable to keep the bloodline pure.
Maybe if you're a Lannister,
okay,
but not if you're anybody else. And that seems to be, and I don't even know. I don't even know if their dad knows. I mean, again, I'm only finished the second book, and there hasn't been a lot of what's his name? Starts with a T.
Tywin.
Tywin. Yes, thank you. Tywin. Yeah, Lannister. Tywin Lannister is the head of the Lannister household, and I don't even know if he knows about his two kids going at it, whether he cares or whether it's his idea. I didn't catch any of that yet, but it strikes you as like how arrogant Jaime is and how arrogant Cersei is. Like, it almost feels like it's kind of their undertaking, you know, and it's the only, and they probably had kind of a abusive slash, you know, high pressure household, and they kind of turned to one another. They turned inward for support. Mm-hmm. So they have all that. But yeah, in the general realm of the world in Westeros, incest is not acceptable at all. The only thing I'll say about the details of the book is I read them via audiobook. And I've had I've had lots of friends complain about how boring it gets when he's talking about a meal. And it's like, you know, page after page of describing the soup and then the bean soup and the curd soup and then the soup after the soup and then the bread between the soup and the meal. And anyway, it goes on for quite some time.
Right.
But it's not quite as hard to stomach, if you'll pardon the pun, when Roy Dotrice is reading it, because he gets excited about it, or it allows you to kind of sort of tune out. You know, like if you're ironing or if you're doing your dishes or whatever while you're listening, you can kind of just tune out a little bit and then come back when he starts to mention someone's name or starts to get a little bit more important. So you might want to look into the end of the audiobooks, because it would be a fast way to consume book one.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And not to mention that Roy Dotrice is fantastic. He's great.
Cool. I haven't heard his readings before. Really, the only audiobooks that I've listened to were the Harry Potter books, which were phenomenal.
Yeah, I've heard those were good.
Yeah, those were excellent, excellent audiobooks. And I did that after reading the majority of them, mm-hmm. Just to get a different take on it. So I will definitely look into that for Game of Thrones.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I really enjoyed a lot of things about this episode. I think the thing that catches everybody off guard is that Eddard is still alive.
Yeah.
And he's only alive because the king wants him alive and wants him to still be the hand. I mean, they basically had a fight the last time that you saw them together, and he's still forcing him to be the hand. And he even threatens to pin the honor on Jaime Lannister if Ed doesn't step up.
Which is a brilliant move. He's like, well, there's no way I'm stepping down now.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And it leads to one of my favorite moments for Eddard Stark, is that like he has this kind of stoic, you know, not really wanting to jump into any action thing going on, because he's a very honorable man. And he is prompted to then, you know, swing back. And, you know, he's the hand of the king. And what he, you know, is not obvious right away is that he's got a big fist. You know, so the mountain, Clegane, oversteps his bounds and is, you know, pillaging his own lands and doing some nasty things on behalf of the Lannisters. And, you know, Eddard basically stands up in court and says, strip him of his land, strip him of his titles, take 100 of the king's men, go find him and bring him here and send a message to Tywin Lannister that, you know, we're doing this because you're being a dick. And it has that, because it's, you know, it's Sean Bean, he's got that delivery, he's got that presence. It has that, you know, like, I'm pissed off now. You know, like,
well, I think it's, part of that is because of, his wife's sigil was what they were blaming it on or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. her family was involved, or they were trying to involve her family.
Her family.
Yes, implicate.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. The Lannisters were trying to frame the Tullys.
Correct.
Which is Catelyn's house, but obviously that wasn't happening, because I don't know if they mentioned it quickly, but at some point they certainly alluded to the fact that Catelyn's father, the head of the Tully household, is very old and very ill and would not really be ordering anybody to go pillage anything.
Yeah, they actually, I mentioned he was 90 something, but looking to take a new wife back when she arrested Lannister.
Yes.
That's not
her dad, though.
Is that her dad? Okay,
that was his dad.
Okay, sorry.
That was his dad. And you're close, though, because Catelyn's father and that gentleman's father were friends.
Okay.
And that's how they're friends of the houses were friends. Actually, what's funny about that, you get to meet that character in book two.
Okay.
I think so. I think it's book two. Might even be book one. I start to get them all mishmashed together. So.
It starts to blend together after a little while.
It really does. I feel bad for Chad, who's read, like, you know, all five of them. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, trying to keep straight our one little 15-minute clip of his books, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think part of, you know, a lot of it had to do with, I mean, he's defending his house, but I mean, like, he also had a spear shoved through his thigh.
Yeah.
You know, I would be pretty pissed off too.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that was a crazy scene.
Yeah. I mean, and Ned's not the only person to really step out of his his shell in this one. Cersei steps out of line. And in that first scene in the bedroom when Ned wakes up, and you can really see her devotion to her family. By her family, I don't mean her husband and her son. I mean her Lannister family, and because she's you only saw two episodes ago where she's basically tolerating Tyrion because she can't stand the guy, the imp.
Yeah.
But now she's like, return my brother to me immediately and demand. And she gets out of line. And then Robert puts her back in line really fast, violently.
And,
It was, the first time I watched through this, I had forgotten about that scene when I watched it the other night. And I remember how that really kind of struck me, kind of going, oh.
Yeah, he had a real Sean Connery moment there because he says, she says to him, I wear it as a badge of honor. And he says, be silent or I'll honor you again.
Yeah.
It was a great line, you know. And then it was funny because he immediately said something to Ned and then sat down. And he's like, I probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she just makes me so angry, and she pushes buttons. I mean, and it's funny, like you can see her starting to kind of step outside this role that she's supposed to be in. And I mean, as the plot rolls forward, she's obviously, has her own designs and her own agenda, but she's starting to lose patience. And, you can see where the restraints are. Like, obviously Robert is a big block in the path, right?
Yeah. Correct.
So it's one of those things where, like you can see her step outside of it and then get smacked back into place. And then you can see the disdain on her face and the hatred that she has for this guy who, again, they were joking around, two episodes ago. So it just, she's got this like Jekyll and Hyde thing going on all the time. And it's really hard to predict what she's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got some crazy. That's what it comes down to. She's
she's
cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs on a lot of different levels.
Yeah, that's a girl if you break up with, you got to back away.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Definitely. Well, look, speaking of cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, the Eyrie and Catelyn's sister is batty as a belfry, and her son is no better, talking about wanting the little man to fly all the time. And I mean, one of the best scenes, I think, in the whole book, the whole first book, the whole first season is the scene when Tyrion is on trial with he has to then first he has to get out of his cell, which
is well done.
Yes.
I thought that was awesome. That was one of my favorite scenes and interactions from the whole episode, was just Tyrion talking to the prison guard. Did they give him an actual name, by the way? Did they name his character?
Yeah, he calls him out. I don't know if it's a name or if it's a title.
Okay.
Because he calls him like the gatekeeper at one point. I think he calls him guard. But I want to say it's like something really simple like crawl or scrawl or, munge. Or it's really not a memorable name. And it's just one name. There's no kind of family house associated with it. Because he's really not supposed to be that bright.
Where's the gold? You don't have none on you, and he just keeps hitting them.
Like no gold.
Every set is punctuated by a smack of that little billy club, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was really well done. But it's an opportunity, obviously, for Tyrion to show everybody his real weapon is his wit and the fact that he can talk his way out of most situations, and his knowledge of the law of the land and how he can think they've got him right where they want him, and then he says, "Well, someone's going to fight for me."
Well, yeah, instead of a jury or a proper trial, he wants trial by combat. And she's like, okay. And then, calling his brother. She's like, nope, now. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And you had something to say about Bronn, the guy that stands up.
Yeah, I really get a kick out of him because I think him and Tyrion are good, because Bronn's the one that stepped up when Tyrion first came to the bar and said, whose room can I take? He said, you take my room. He sees an opportunity there, right?
Yeah.
And he sees him, Tyrion as a wise investment. So, just when he says, do I have a champion? He's like, I'll do it. And he's just like, why not? Right? I got nothing else going on.
Yeah.
And then, as the fight progressed and at the end of it, Liza or whatever says, you do not fight with honor. And he just sort of points at the hole and says, he did, right? Which is really funny because first you thought, maybe, he'll stay the killing stroke and maybe he won't. And, true to form, hope is cute.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really quite funny.
the thing I liked about the actor that portrays Braun in the TV show is his ability to say a full sentence with just his eyes, just the looks that he gives to Tyrion, you know, right before he says, yeah, I'll step up and do that. Sure, why not? You know, that kind of stuff. There's a lot that's said with just his eye movements, and that's huge. Mm-hmm, I think that's great storytelling when you can come across in that manner.
Yeah, and those are moments that are obviously articulated in the book with narration, mm-hmm. but you really do get that Bronn, a sellsword, you know, will do...
Right.
I mean, he's basically the Game of Thrones version of a bounty hunter. Mm-hmm. You know, anything for money. If you've got enough of it, I'll do anything you want. But I think there's also, as the story develops, there's a mutual respect that starts to happen between Tyrion Lannister and Bronn.
Absolutely.
And it certainly matures. Well, and I like that aspect of the fight where it's just like, you know, you don't fight to be honorable, you fight to win.
Yeah, but Bronn, you know, they went to give him a shield. He's like, yeah, I don't really need that. Like, he just sort of waved that off. He just, you know, sort of sidestepped the guy with all the armor and the extra weight and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really like, one thing I really like about Tyrion is that he, because of his shortcomings, so to speak, you know, and always, you know, like being looked down upon, he's always, you know, been for the downtrodden sort of thing. He has more of a relationship with them or understanding of how they work, so he can get people to do more things for him for less. Mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to like the queen or anyone else who, you know, all this plotting around, you know, he's just like, you know, come on, man, you know, I'll help you if I can, but you know, come on. Right. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, that moment where he's walking away, takes all that trouble to get his purse back.
Yeah.
You know, from Catelyn's guy.
Yeah.
And then he has it for all of a minute before he tosses it to the guard on his way out.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like last choice pays their debts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's only money.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and it goes to show, you know, anyone with honor, he has it, right? So, in a weird way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the strict definition of it,
you know, and you know, between that, you know, and making the horse saddle, you know, designing the horse saddle for the young fellow and all the other stuff. And,
Which, and that's it's funny. That's not, I didn't put that in the notes, but that's another decent scene when. Bran is riding his horse for the first time.
Oh yeah,
you know, Hodor busts into the stable after this reoccurring dream with the three-eyed crow, and Bran gets to ride his horse, and then in doing so he gets there's an attempted, you know, kidnapping and hijack by a bunch of I can't remember what they are, woods people. I can't remember their actual title.
Yeah, they're north of the wall, so
well, they're just they're wildlings, I think, maybe the
wildlings
character.
Or mountain men, something like
that. Something like that. Anyway, there's a really important scene when he's cutting the saddle off and he takes a huge slice out of Bran's leg. And I mean, obviously it's all fake for TV, but it looks real enough and Bran doesn't even flinch, right? So, because he can't feel anything.
Yeah,
right.
So it really kind of makes Rob, I think, aware of how much protection Bran needs. You know, like he could be out and about in a battle or something on top of a horse as a young lord and have an axe wound into a leg and not even realizing that he's like dead. Like, you're dead. Like, you have to get that taken care of immediately or you're done.
Yep.
You know, so I think that there was a lot of kind of future thought on Rob's behalf about, you know, the future of his family now that his father is, you know, in the position he's in King's Landing and he's trying to rule, you know, well, not rule, but what's the word I'm looking for? Keep the north, or
what's maintain
the north, I guess. Yeah, I mean, he's basically just stepping up. Sorry, there we go. He's stepping up while his father's away, you know, as the head of the household, and he's kind of starting to look at those kind of concerns a little bit differently, as opposed to just protecting his little brother. You can see that he's looking at it as protecting his house and the longevity of his house.
Yeah. And bringing the woman back as a prisoner and then, you know, slash guest, it was a nice little device to help shed a little more insight into what's happening on the north of the wall, you know? The lord or whatever that guy's name is, you know, making a play for her sort of thing. And then the steward comes in and stops it. And she says, you know, I know a man who will chew him up and pick her teeth with his bones sort of thing. Like, he's just... It's a little rougher on the north of the wall, and you know, little bits and pieces like that help to, you know, keep that in the back of your mind. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, winter is coming after all, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
Cool. Go ahead, Peyton.
Then, you know, from away from the wall, you go to the other side of the ocean with the
oh, right.
You know, the fun stuff happening over there.
Yeah, eating the horse heart.
The horse heart.
Yeah.
Jocelyn made a really good point actually when we were watching it, because I mean I was questioning. I didn't remember the weight of it. Like I didn't understand why the horse heart was important. And she said, you know, immediately, well, it's not really about the horse heart. It's about the connection that Daenerys has with Khal Drogo and how she's stronger now because of her relationship with him, you know, because she's the Khaleesi and because she's learning so much from him and because she loves him and he loves her and all this kind of stuff, the strength that she draws there. But I was having a really hard time remembering like why she has to eat a horse heart in the first place. Like I understand that the horse culture and all that thing was happening, but I felt like for some reason this time around, it struck me as just like a really gross thing to do on TV, you know, or a really gross thing to put in a book. Like it didn't really feel like it had,
I wonder if it had anything to do with the fact that she was carrying his child, if it was something to help nurture the child or, you know.
Jocelyn brought that up too, that it was because she had a child inside of her that she was pregnant. It was part of like, it's one of their rituals.
Maybe that makes her more part of the tribe and therefore that kid is more pure.
Yeah, it might be kind of an older way for them to guarantee the birth of a boy.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of a false, not a false prophet, but a false ceremony.
Well, she did name the child after, you know, that horse heart.
Yeah.
So she, I think it was in either that episode or the one before where they found out, you know, she was going to have a boy. And this was part of that ritual of, okay, he's going to be, you know, the next in line, so to speak. Yeah. The prince, if you will, if you want to go that way.
Yeah, well, but the thing about the boy is that, I mean, they don't know. She says she feels that it's a boy. And I mean, for me, I felt like that was more of just something to say to please the Carl. I don't know if they can actually tell. I mean, I think, I mean, it depends on how far she's along, I guess. Because, I understand from, I'm not father to child. So I understand that at some point, boys carry different than girls.
Well, I know from her experience, like my wife always said that she never, ever thought she was carrying a daughter. In my wife's family, it's all girls. Sure. And in fact, for the most part, but at no point, like even her mother was like, you know, you're having a girl. And at no point did Lee think she was having a girl. Even at one point, she had a dream that when a nurse gave Ewan to her, that he was wrapped in a pink blanket. And she's like, I don't care what you're wrapped in, you're still a boy. Like, you know, like in her mind, it's like, it was never a question. And you know, I guess, you know, a mother knows, but, you know, maybe they're just drawing on something like that. But yeah. I don't know.
Well, and that scene, of course, with the horse heart where Daenerys finishes it and doesn't waver, doesn't lose her guts, which I think any of us would, is a pivotal scene for Viserys as well, because he's really fed up. Like
he also realized he's lost complete control of the situation, right?
Oh, complete control. Not only that, but he has no respect from anybody. Zero.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and so he gets kind of whiny and pissed off and stomps off to go steal stuff and take off and is not obeying the rules and not obeying the laws. And it's kind of like, it's funny how arrogant he is, you know, because you're like, you're in somebody else's land. You're in somebody else's city. They are a whole bunch of really large, muscular warrior people. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to listen to their rules.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think during when he was confronted from trying to steal his stuff, he was saying how he was groomed for that role since he was five.
Right.
Right. So his entire life, he's brought up to believe, you know, he's the one, and, you know.
Yeah. It's funny that, you know what, he is having the exact opposite experience that the Lannisters are having.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Jaime Lannister in his shining white armor, Cersei as queen, their secret son, Joffrey, you know, who's going to eventually be king, you know, sooner or later. You know, it's one of those situations where you can really see the black and white of it, where Viserys and Daenerys are across the narrow sea getting the shit end of the stick. Well, I mean, Viserys is. I don't know. Daenerys is actually kind of warming up to her situation, I think.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, of course, that leads to him entering into the last scene.
Yeah.
Hammered.
A little inebriated. Yeah,
hammered. Yeah,
just a little bit.
Yeah, wailing and whining and demanding his crown. Waving a sword around, and then of course he has this pivotal scene where he's you know, sticking a sword at Daenerys's belly, and is threatening to kill her. And what I don't know if
he said you're coming with me, and I'll cut the baby out and leave it here.
You leave it here for him,
right.
Yeah. And I don't know if he realized that Daenerys' slave girl, the one that Viserys bought and was in the tub with, is sitting next to Khal Drogo and translating. I don't know if he saw that. I think Daenerys saw that. And that's, I mean, because she was unafraid. She had no, she's like, you're not going to be able to move an inch before three guys are going to jump on you and you're done. But
I think she's also realizing that he's not the dragon, that maybe somebody else is.
Yes.
Well, you know, that brings up an interesting point. And then we can get back to that little piece of the story. But Daenerys, she has that egg that she puts into the fire previously in the episode. Mm-hmm. And as she sets it down, it sits there and it doesn't catch fire. It just gets very hot. Mm. And as her assistant is coming in, she reaches in, grabs that egg out of the flames, and her assistant, I forget her name, grabs the eggs from her and ends up burning her hands.
Yeah.
So you see the imprint on her hands where the queen had nothing. Yeah, Daenerys had nothing, no marks at all on her hands. So that's some very interesting foreshadowing that took place before, you know, her brother walks in stumbling drunk.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, I mean, that's something that, again, does fly by very quickly in dialogue earlier in the series, but the Targaryens, which is Daenerys and Viserys, is what their whole family heritage is. Also, their father or ancestor or grandfather maybe was the Mad King, which is who Robert Baratheon overthrew. They're all supposed to be descended from dragons. Mm-hmm. That's where the whole wake the dragon thing, Viserys kind of takes it to a whole new level of stupid. But but the whole idea is that there actually was some breeding that happened, you know, between people and dragons, and somewhere along the lines, you know, a little bit of dragon blood got into the human line, and it gives
is interbreeding, or is it like drinking the blood and mixing it almost like the horse thing?
I don't know. I have no. I you know, like it doesn't. It kind of. It leaves that kind of mysticism up to your imagination, I guess.
Okay.
I also don't really remember because this is this is part of one of those long passages in the book where he's talking about, you know, he kind of goes all Lord of the Rings on you and starts talking about somebody's grandfather, and you're just like, whatever. I'm never going to remember this. You know, you're reading name after name after name. But of course, is that, you know, real Targaryens, people that are true bloods, they're not harmed by fire. Mm-hmm. Which is the same as a dragon. And the thing that it made me think of with all of the incest that's going on and all that other stuff, you kind of think, oh, maybe Viserys was a bastard.
Hmm. Oh, that's a good point.
You know, I mean, again, I'm just kind of spitballing with what I remember from the book. There might have been more clear signs, but, you know, maybe with all the, you know, debauchery that goes on in Westeros that, you know, Viserys really wasn't his father's son, or wasn't the son of his mother and father. Like, it just, you know, it could have been somebody else.
Yeah, that's a great point. I never even thought of that.
You know, because maybe because the Mad King, maybe he wasn't a true dragon. Maybe it was his wife that had the blood of the dragon flowing through her line, and then the dad got, you know, busy somewhere else. They passed the kid off as his anyway.
I don't know. Could both the brother and sister have white hair? So that would be a very recessive gene to try to.
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, maybe maybe the other person that he got with was also Targaryen, but maybe not the line of the dragon. Like, I'm also kind of, you know, lost in my own thoughts on that. But it was kind of an interesting thing that popped into my head when I realized that. You know, I was like, oh yeah, maybe he isn't as, you know, who he says or who he thinks he is.
Yeah, this is where Ned in that book would come in real handy.
Yeah, really though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so we should probably move on to the next part there where he, after all the translation and the knife is held to Viserys' stomach, the Drogo basically says, you know, you'll have a crown that men will tremble at, which I thought was pretty neat.
At which
point my wife is watching it with me and she's like, oh no, and she starts like curling up in a ball like, he's not going. I'm like, It was really quite cool.
I mean, that is probably one of, I can't even think of a worse way to go, having molten gold poured over your head as your crown.
And the sound it made when his head hit the floor.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, when it happened the first time I watched it, and this happened a lot, you know, my girlfriend Deb and I were watching the series together, and when this particular scene happened, you know, in the same episode as the horse heart being eaten, there was a lot of like squirming and turning away when this went down. It was brutal.
Yeah, and you know really what it is? Was. It's the sound effects.
Yes.
It's the gloppy, slurpy, you know, sound of her eating the heart. And there was other scenes that sound was good. Chad has actually mentioned that about The Walking Dead. It's not so much the visuals on The Walking Dead that get you, it's the sound.
Yeah.
You know, and I totally agree. And you're right. Like all of the sizzling and the screaming. Oh my God.
Well, his screaming was great because it wasn't your, you know, like a lesser film or something might do like a long drawn out agony sort of thing. He was just like,
no!
And that was it. He's like, you know, my inside of my head is about to explode and I can't scream anymore. So,
Well, that's the thing. Like we were talking about this last night, Jocelyn and I, about what actually killed him. I mean, my first thought when I heard it in the book, and it is just as visceral and just as shocking when you read it or hear it read to you in the book, it is like, oh my God, he's really going to do this. Cause you don't like Viserys, you kind of want him to die. Like you don't like him from the get go. It made me think like, well, immediately I think, well, does the gold melt through your skull into your brain? Or do you just die of shock? It's like, obviously you're burning, like you get melted.
Yeah.
You know,
I say your skull would probably crack.
Yeah. I'd say your skull would crack, but I would imagine like something that after a short discussion last night, Jocelyn and I kind of figured that your brain would probably boil.
Yeah.
You know, with all that heat from the molten gold coating your head, it's something viscous. It only goes as far as his neck, maybe a little dribble somewhere else, but that's it. It really doesn't go very far. And I would just imagine that all that heat contained in one little spot, I would imagine that that would be what would happen, is that your brain would either
shoot out of his nose like a cartoon. It'd be awesome.
Like your brain would swell and boil in its own juices. And I mean, it would be short, but it would hurt like hell.
Mm. This would be great for Mythbusters.
Yes.
It really would. You know, just have them figure it out.
Yeah, they probably do with a pig skull or something, right?
Well, hey, you know.
Yeah.
Gotta do what you got to do, but it'd be cool to see.
Yeah. With the price of gold these days, though, I don't know.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
You could try it with lead.
Yeah.
Try it with something.
Yeah,
any kind of molten metal would probably do it. I don't know. I'm not sure whether gold would be, like, whether something like lead would burn right through. Whereas gold would coat first? I don't know. We'd have to... All the physicists in the audience, we need them to let us know what the denser material would do.
Yeah, we need to know. You know, what temperature does the gold get up to at that point, too?
Yeah. I mean, I know the boiling temperature of water, but I don't know what the melting point of gold is.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Brian, do you have anything else that you want to point out about the episode? I think me and Peyton have covered all we need to talk about.
Yeah, you know, I think it's more of an ongoing theme with every episode is that I can't stand Prince Joffrey. And that's just a testament to how well of a job they're doing with that character.
Mm-hmm.
He just drives me batshit crazy. He really does. I just want to smack him in the face and move on. And I just, every time he comes on, I'm like, oh, I can't take it. I really can't take it, which is great because that's how you should feel when you see this jerk get on the screen. And it was really one of those things where Ned's daughter should have just taken him out, you know, when they were fighting with the butchers, when he was picking on the butcher's son, you know, she should have just killed him then and moved on. But then we wouldn't have such a good story. So,
yeah, no, agreed.
What would have happened if that was the case? Because then Ned would have had to deal with that because then they would have came after her daughter and then he would.
Right.
Yeah.
It all would have exploded
who would be
a lot
king
sooner.
At that point, right?
Yeah. It all would have exploded a lot sooner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. I think it would have.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, Brian. I can't stand him.
Yeah, I think he'll face a problem as an actor later in life, almost the same as Malfoy from Harry Potter.
Oh, that's a good point. You
know,
yeah.
Like what are you gonna do after that, you know?
Yeah, you're typecast at that point. Yeah. So
it's like or it's like Jake Lloyd from the first Star Wars movie, Episode 1.
Right.
He had a really hard time in school, apparently, being teased about being, you know, the young Darth Vader and being in the movie with Jar Jar Binks and, you know, not being a terribly good child actor and all that kind of stuff. But not only, it's weird, like, it's one of those rare situations where you can suck as being an actor, but you're still seen by billions of people.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Yeah, and there's been some funny YouTube videos of him talking about and addressing that situation. So
right on. I haven't seen
that. If you talk, he reflects on his, you know, his college years, and how people are always coming up to him and giving him shit, and he's like, "Come on, dude, that was 10 years ago. You can give it up, right?
Yeah,
go over."
Yeah, right on. All right. Well,
just two other points.
Yeah.
One is at the very end of the entire Golden Crown thing. The missus, she says he wasn't a real dragon because, you know, dragons don't burn. Like, she actually says something to that effect.
So yes. Yeah.
And reflecting back to her holding the egg earlier, you get a sense of who the real dragon is.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was pretty neat. But also, the scene when Tyrion is confessing his crimes was quite funny, I thought. Am I still there? Okay, sorry.
Yeah, you're still here.
I thought I lost you a second there. Yeah, I thought it was cracking me up because the guys in the background were laughing and all that sort of thing. And, you know, his the soup thing was quite funny. The sister drank. Which I thought was really hilarious. But there's a funny mashup of that scene online, and I don't have a link for it anywhere. But it's him doing that, but it's not his voice. It's Chunk from the Goonies.
Oh, no
Chunk's
way.
Chunk's confessing about the time when he was throwing up in the theater. Anyway, it's really quite funny because it all matches up pretty closely. So,
oh, that's awesome.
See if I can find it and throw it in the show notes after. Worth checking out for sure. So.
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
Too good. All right. Well, I guess in the essence of time, we should probably move on to some other things that we've been enjoying on the video screens. And in light of what Peyton had mentioned, I think last week, about enjoying the lighter side of entertainment now that he's a father, I decided to check out Real Steel, which was that robot boxing movie that Hugh Jackman was in.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It was good, man. It was really good. And the first shock came when I checked in on Get Glue, and Get Glue awarded me with an Oscar nominee sticker. And I was like, what? How is this nominated for an Oscar? Because I knew what it was, and I knew that people weren't raving about it because it's a kid family movie. Like, it's aimed at 11-year-olds. It totally is straight up, like, family safe, right? Mm-hmm. And then I thought, oh, special effects. It has to be the special effects. So then I got excited because I thought, okay, this is either going to be mediocre all around, or it's actually going to have, you know, some decent, you know, visual stuff that I can at least, you know, geek out on eye candy. And the special effects were incredible. And I mean that in a way that you forget that they're special effects.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It's that fluid, huh?
It's that fluid. And they do that really good job of, like, having a prop, you know, when the robot boxer is in the corner and Hugh Jackman and the kid, Max, I think his name is, they've got to, you know, touch him and put wires together and, you know, fix dents and all this kind of stuff during the match. They're touching a real thing. But then as soon as the camera backs up to 10 feet and this thing has to stand up and start going at the other opponent, it's back to being, obviously, you know, CG.
Right.
But obviously CG only because I'm an animator and I know that it has to be. Like, I the story was good enough that it really does suck you in, and you really forget that that it's a special effect movie. Like, it's a lot of heart. You know, Hugh Jackman looks like he has a good time on the movie. It's not campy at all. There's a couple of little plot holes that don't really make sense, but I mean, I can forgive it in the fact that they probably wanted to keep it to a reasonable time, you know, like, you know, just shy of 2 hours sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I don't want to spoil it. I wasn't a big fan of the way that it ended, but I understand why they did that way. The end kind of smacks of a moral lesson learned, and that's what I don't like it when movies beat you over the head with that.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
I like it when they kind of, I would have been totally cool with, like, the happily ever after thing. Like, that would have been all right with me. But they handle a little bit different. I mean, I can give them points for being different, but I can take points away for really kind of pulling the wind out of your sails a little bit.
So there's no happily ever after in that movie?
Well, there is, but not the one you expect, I guess. Okay. You know, like, it's not Disney, is what I'm saying.
He marries a robot.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, you know, like, they put robot boobs on it, and it goes, you know, it's kind of hard to deal with in the bedroom, but anyway. The interaction between the robots and the imagination behind some of the robots too is really, really cool. And they don't, the other thing they don't do is they don't do a lot of, like, monologuing, or they don't take a huge amount of time to explain to you how the robots work, how they control the robots. They just kind of throw you right in. Just robot boxing is robot boxing. It exists. They don't even really, I don't even know if they say what year it is. You know, they say that Generation 1 bots would be around 2014. So it's obviously later than 2014, but that's it.
Well, I think that anyone going to see that film are going to see robots boxing. So
no, and it's aimed at 10-year-old boys.
Yeah. So.
Oh yeah. No, and it's totally worth seeing. I mean, almost worth owning. You know, like I would watch it again.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely worth seeing. And like you said, Peyton, if you're looking for something that's not, you know, dark and evil and violent and all that kind of stuff, it's actually a little bit too old for Ewan, but probably something that you'd enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're still watching the Backyardigans and the Beethoven movies. So.
Scene. Well, the other thing that I'll touch on quickly, because I've seen it and I've talked about it before, I think, was I watched the Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I was over at Joel's the other night when he had it on. It was actually quite amazing to see it on a proper home theater system with the proper surround sound and the big screen TV with the Blu-ray. It was like very, very cool. I can see why people, you know, spend the bucks to get the nice toys like that. It looks like a good investment if you're going to be spending a fair bit of time watching TV.
No, it's cool. One of those weird situations where normally, I mean, I prefer a good story. Like, I like The Lord of the Rings. I like that it's beautiful, but I like that it's a good story. Yeah. And Avatar, I think we can all agree, is kind of recycled. There's not a whole lot new going on there. But the visuals of this movie, they kind of almost make up for it. I don't know if that makes me shallow, but they really do. On Blu-ray at home, it does the full at 185, so it takes up the full screen. I was looking for some non-superhero, non-comic related kind of inspiration, and I just really enjoy the same thing that Chad enjoys about James Cameron's work, is that he just invents everything. Mm-hmm. Like, he just, if it doesn't exist, he makes it, whether that's a physical thing to make the movie or whether that's, you know, a culture, a language, you know, an entire ecosystem that the film company hires biologists to come in and say, well, would this work? Oh no, you can't, that wouldn't be there. That would be an underwater plant. You gotta, the ones above ground would look like this, you know, just stuff like that just really make the whole thing convincing. Yeah. And then you combine that with, you know, the intensity of the Blu-ray and sound system and stuff like that. It was just really, really, really cool.
So definitely a little obsessive, but it pays off on the screen for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if, you know, taking 10 or 15 years to make a movie is really all that practical, but and if I'm going to wait another 15 years for another Avatar, because I think they're making another one, I really hope he can come up with some original plot devices.
I think the second one should just be a follow-up to when the guys get back on the space station and then just nuke it from orbit.
Yeah.
It's like a five-minute film. Done.
Done. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of plot holes. And, I mean, it's The Last of the Mohicans. It's Dances with the Wolves. It's Ferngully. I mean, it's all the same sort of, you know, things. I mean, at the same time, if it's not broke, don't fix it, sort of thing. No matter how much I complain about the story, I still get angry when they blow up Home Tree.
Yeah.
It pisses me off. You know, I really enjoy, like, you're definitely on the side of the Na'vi for sure.
Yeah. Just thinking the John Carter, they have a new trailer for that now, and like a new Disney film and that. And with those movies, you know, was based on the older book, and that book was a source material for much of the sci-fi we see today. And a lot of people are saying that the John Carter movie probably won't do as well as they would like, you know, because a lot of the things that we see in the film has already been taken and used in other films like Avatar and like, you know, the Star Wars thing, like the big arena thing with the white apes. A lot of people are saying that's basically from, you know, Clone Wars. It's the same central setup, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that stacks up. But, you know, because you look at with the white apes in the John Carter film, you know, he has the six appendages in that. And then they show the humanoids there who also have six appendages. So, like, you know, we look at Avatar, all of a sudden the humanoids only have, you know, four as opposed to the six, which sort of, I don't know. Every other species you see there has six arms. So why does the Na'vi all of a sudden only have, you know, four appendages and not six?
Yeah,
just a minor little, you know, thing there. But
it's probably something to do with, you know, getting the audience to identify with them more. That sort of thing. Yeah. So, but that's the thing. Like, they do. You know, you're talking about how all the mammals have six appendages, and then there's a different. It's I think the avian characters have four.
Yeah.
Do they not patent the
birds? I think the ones they ride have four, but I think the Great Leonoptrix or whatever, the big orange one.
Yeah.
And I think that one has, you know, the two big chicken legs on the bottom, which look a little weird. So he has six. But
yeah. But two of them are kind of wings. I don't know whether they actually have like arms on them or whether they're just like, you know, tail fins or something. But yeah, he's obviously meant to be different. But the avian characters
all have four.
But that's the thing. Like, you get into something that is that diverse and is that imaginative and wonderful in terms of the art direction and the creatures and all the imagination that's in it. And the thing that they're after is called unobtainium.
Yeah.
It's like, really? You know, George Lucas in 1981 or 83, when he made Empire Strikes Back?
Jedi was 83, so I think Empire was 79.
That's right, because 77 was Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. So 79, when Empire Strikes Back came out, carbonite. Yeah. It's imaginary, and it sounds cool. Like, absolutely. You know, James Cameron, what are you doing? Unobtainium? Really? Like, come on with something else.
They were drawing names out of a hat when they came up with that.
Yeah. I need to see the behind the scenes footage and the inside joke as to why they kept that as the name, and then I might accept it. If it's got a really good story, like his grandmother came to the studio one day and she named it. Like,
well, I think they're probably just shooting that scene and then that line dialogue wasn't written. And he's like, unobtainium. We'll fix it later in post.
Yeah. Exactly. Empire was an 80. Thank you, Boba Fetish, in the chat room. I knew it wasn't 79, but thank you. Much appreciated. And by the way, hi, chat room. Thanks, everybody that comes by the live chat when we record the show. Always nice to hang out with everybody and see a few things bumping around in there. One of the things that just flew by, actually, was a Game of Thrones MMO link that Dartmouth Diva threw in the chat room. So I'm going to have to check that out later. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I thought I saw something on Amazon about a Game of Thrones video game, but I didn't have time to dive into it, so I'm guessing that's what it was, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, another MMO.
Crazy. Yeah no kidding. Yeah. Enough of my time is spent in the Old Republic right now.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So, Peyton, besides coming over here to hang out and watch Avatar, what were you watching this week?
My neighbors, she rented a PBS series called Downton Abbey. Takes place around it opens in 1912, and it's this big estate in London, and there's a lord, and it's all about the inner workings of this particular estate. And it opens when the Titanic sinks, and word comes in, and their eldest, the guy doesn't have any sons, so the oldest daughter has to marry this fella in order for the state to stay within the family and all that. But he dies on the Titanic. So it's all about the chaos that ensues after that and the intrigue and everything else. And it was a little reminiscent of the Pride and Prejudice series that we used to watch all the time. My wife and I, again, back when we didn't have cable living at the university, watched it fairly often. It's a good series and all that from A&E. And so we start watching this, and, you know, we watch an episode. I'm like, okay, there's a little bit of stuff going on here. And then after about halfway through the second episode or so, I had this total aha moment. I'm like, this is a soap opera. I'm like, that's it. I'm done, right? But I'm like, wait now. This is foolishness, right? It's got some nice, neat things. And some of the characters you root for, and some of them you're like, you know, oh, hiss, boo, sort of thing, right? And again, because it starts off in 1912, and it's going to, you know, work its way through World War I and all that fun stuff. And So my wife now, she's just devoured the entire first season in a matter of like 3 days, and now she's halfway through, she's a third way through the second season, so she's eating that up pretty quickly, which is actually good, because right now we're actually an episode ahead of Game of Thrones, because she's like, as soon as you watch one, she wants, let's watch another one. I'm like, we can't get too far ahead, right? So this will help rein her back in. It'll keep her busy for another couple of days so that next week we'll be back on track, so... So that's pretty much what I've been watching. How about you, Brian? What you been watching on the old tube of the net of the interior of the TV of the thing?
I've actually been I've been getting into the IT crowd. You know, having the background that I do in troubleshooting and being just in IT over the years, you'd think this is something I would have caught from the beginning, and I totally missed it. Just like Jonathan Colton, which I didn't start listening to until last year somehow. So I've made this mission to better improve my that's kind of redundant, better improve, to improve my geek cred, and start catching up on all the things that I've missed over the last few years. So the IT Crowd was one of them, and it's a freaking hilarious show. It's really, really funny, and British comedy is something that I was only into a little bit. Another big hole in my geek cred is I've never seen anything Monty Python.
Oh man, they're on Netflix actually too.
Yeah. See, I'm waiting for Nerdtacular. That's one of the movies we're gonna be watching is some of the Monty Python stuff. So
fun.
I told everybody I'd wait for then.
Yeah. Okay.
That's great. I've actually seen the IT Crowd. I haven't.
It's good.
I've only watched like 3 episodes.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, it looks like a low budget kind of British sitcom.
Sure.
Type of thing. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't one of those things that made me just want to watch episode after episode.
Gotcha.
I'm doing that with Futurama.
That's also on my list of
things. That's kind of like my, yeah.
Caught up on.
Yeah, it's kind of like my go-to. I haven't seen it in forever, and I have a half an hour lunch break. I need to throw something on that's not a podcast and not going to teach me anything. I need to not learn right now, so I'll throw on Futurama and just watch Bender. I don't learn anything from Bender, so that's
good. It's a lot of Ben things, yeah.
Yeah. All the things I'm not supposed to do.
Right. Yeah. It's good to have those shows that you can tune into and actually tune out at the same time.
Exactly.
Alcatraz is also a phenomenal show. They didn't have it this past week because of NASCAR, but if you haven't seen Alcatraz on Fox, I highly recommend it.
Oh. Is that like really a sci-fi sort of show?
There's definitely some sci-fi quality to it and storytelling and a lot of questions about what's going on. But the general premise is, back in 1962, I believe, as far as the show is concerned, Alcatraz was closed down. And when it was closed down, a number of the guards as well as a number of the prisoners just vanished.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden, they're coming back in current day. They time traveled, didn't skip a beat, and now they're back and they're going about their murdering, thieving ways. They've got a special group of detectives that are trying to track them all down and piece together what's going on.
So when they're back, do they all show up back in the prison or just back?
No, just back in the world, just back in the States, back in California, San Francisco, that area.
Well, that much time passed. I'm sure it's time served, so I'm sure they'd be louder anyway.
Yeah, really though. That actually sounds quite interesting. I like stuff like that.
Little twists. Really cool.
Yeah.
And is Sam Neill on that one or?
I think he is actually.
Okay. I've only seen
Sam Neill is the dude from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, from Jurassic Park. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I had to place the name with the face.
Yeah.
He is on that. He's one of the main characters in the show. Huh. And I believe it's from J.J. Abrams is one of the guys behind the show.
Oh, so that makes sense.
Yeah, there's your Star Trek connection.
Lost in Alcatraz.
And Lost, yep. So highly recommend checking that out too. It's very, very good.
Cool. Right on. Always nice to have a new thing. I unfortunately don't have Fox. I'm a cord cutter. So I have Apple TV, Netflix, and the odd opportunity to catch something that's actually online and viewable. But we will. I'll see what I can do about locating that and maybe rent it or somehow sort it out.
Yeah, Amazon.com. I don't know if you can get Amazon up in Canada and stream stuff that way.
I don't know. It's one of those things where we can, but it would have the same problem as Netflix. The copyright across the border causes a problem.
Yeah.
We have Netflix, but we don't have the same Netflix. Now, on the plus side, which I hear about a lot on the Twit network, is that there's a lot of people on Twit that are big fans of the BBC. Well, because Canada is part of the Commonwealth, we actually can access BBC stuff that goes to Netflix.
Okay.
Not all of that content, depending on what deals they have internationally, is available in the US. I was just listening to Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood on Framerate the other day complain about not being able to watch the next series of Sherlock. But I'm pretty sure that I can view it on Netflix or Apple TV. I thought it's Apple TV. Okay. I have to pay for it. I could pay for it. But that they were complaining that they couldn't even pay for it to watch it. They'd have, their only way to do it is to either use some sort of VPN or something to fake that they're in England or to illegally pirate it. Right. But in Canada, because of our location and our association with Britain, I guess we can actually, because of the similar in the copyright laws, the way that it works, I can spend, if I wanted to, I think it's $20 for a season pass for like 5 or 6 episodes of, and they're 90-minute episodes. So it's actually not a bad deal, of Sherlock, which is a really good series. I saw season 1 on Netflix, and that's really cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Well, I guess we can wrap up what we've been watching and go on to what we've been reading. More good stuff for the eyeballs. And both Peyton and I, actually, we have a mutual pick. Peyton, you probably heard about it from me, did you?
Yeah. No, you sent me a link for it.
So. Yeah. So it's The Wormworld Saga by Daniel Liesk. And he is a German painter and comic book artist. He is a graphic novelist, I guess is the best way to describe him. I read both chapters online. They're both also available on his iPad app for free. And they're painted on what's called an infinite canvas. So rather than page turning, as you would think a regular comic book would go, you just kind of scroll down, and he composes his chapters in these long, long ribbons of artwork and story as he tells the story about a young boy going to his grandmother's farm and all the imagination and stuff that happens there. I don't want to spoil too much, so I'm not going to get into the story. I liked it. A little simple, but I think it's meant for kind of an all-ages sort of situation.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And also, I feel like there might have been a little bit of nuance lost in the translation from German. Because he wrote it in German. It was intended, you know, for his local community first, and obviously was translated into different languages as he went. I mean, English, he speaks on a podcast, which is in my music picks later, but... he's obviously articulate, but English is still a second language. So I feel like there's just a little bit of, it's like, it's very formal when it shouldn't be, you know, like it's I am instead of I'm going to go here. It's I am going to go to the store. And it feels very, formal a lot of the time. And it takes a little bit of the, warmth, I guess, out of it. But I'm blaming a translation. I'm not suggesting anything about the author. I really liked it. And it's good to get into now because the third chapter is due out in April of this year. And it's at www.wormsworldsaga.com. And it's one of the best looking graphic novels I've seen in a while. The designs are, I got a little simple for my taste, but I understand why he did it after listening to him talk about it. His painting and his treatment of light is gorgeous.
Very, very nice.
Really, really pretty.
His layouts are great too, like especially considering traditionally where you would flip from left to right, you know, to have the flow of the pages. Switch it to the infinite canvas going vertically, you know, I'm sure he would have to adjust the flow from, you know, one page to the next without having you getting all lost and discombobulated. And I like how some of the frames have like structured panels, other ones are a little more free form. I think it's something he could really do if he like be interesting if he just releases on a weekly basis, page at a time or something like that. But you say he just releases a full chapter at a time, or
he releases a full chapter at a time. Yeah, the way that he works, his business model is such that he works on a chapter for a series of like 3 months, I think. Okay. And that's long. Like that's his limit he kind of puts on himself, is that he has to be able to complete whatever he's doing in about 3 months.
Okay.
And then releases it to the public. And how he sustains things otherwise is that he puts them for free on the app, but he charges for additional content. So you get to look at the whole thing in rough sketch form, or you get to see some behind-the-scenes sketch art, or you get to hear like audio commentary and stuff from him. And those are the things that you pay for in the app. So, you know, he balances that out.
So would the audio commentary be played as you're reading? Like is there like a quick time where you would play the video and the commentary would scroll with the comic sort of thing?
I don't know if it scrolls with the comic because I don't have... Unfortunately, it's not for iPhone. It's only for iPad, and I don't have an iPad to test it out. I think it might be along the lines of some of his videos. He has YouTube videos that are like an hour long. I don't know how he managed to circumvent the 15-minute limit, but he does kind of these long instructional videos of how he actually paints a scene, and he goes from 0 to 60 all the way through. You know, it's unfortunately, it's nothing really interesting. It's just, you know, the boy, the main character in bed reading a book. Obviously there's some really neat play with light in the scene, but it's not, you know, a really cool forest scene. And that's the thing, like, you can tell from some of the prints and things that he offers on his site that he's drawn ahead and he's done a few things, because some of the really cool imagery that he gets into is a very fantasy sort of world with, like, it looks like there might be some trolls and rats, and he's got a little wooden sword and all this kind of cool stuff that's happening. And that's just starting to happen now. You know, there's just little moments in the book that are hinting at where he's going and what's possibly going to happen. And I'm really excited to see the rest of it. And you said that you had read both chapters.
I picked through the first two chapters there and stuff. And that cat's an arse.
Yeah,
totally. That's all I'm going to say is, like, oh man. No, that might be, maybe the cat turned to be like the cat in Coraline, you know? Maybe it'll be like a guide in the other world or something. Who
right.
knows?
Yeah. It has a higher purpose. You don't know.
But, you know, I had this thing, you know, I'm not a big fan of cats. Plus, I'm allergic. And my wife, she had three cats, and she always wants to have another one, but I'm allergic, so we can't. But I just don't see the point of a cat unless you're on a farm and they're hunters. Like, you know.
Oh, exactly. Well, I was listening to MacBreak Weekly today. And they were discussing cats because the new Apple software that's coming out this summer is called Mountain Lion. Mm-hmm. And Leo Laporte, the main host, was talking about not knowing what a mountain lion was. And he was mistaking a lynx or a bobcat for a mountain lion. Okay. So they showed pictures of mountain lions. They looked it up online. He's like, oh my God, those are huge. And the guys on the other hosts are saying, oh yeah, they will eat you. They're not, you know, and Alex Lindsay, who does not like cats either, says, you know, all cats want to eat you. It's just a human to cat size ratio that prevents them from eating you, right? Right. Once they're big enough, they just will eat you.
Or if there's enough of them and you're old and dead, they will eat you.
They will eat you. Yes.
No.
A friend of mine had a guy I used to work with. He had a cat, and he was talking about a friend of his whose cat got sick and cost like a lot of money to get this cat fixed at the vet, like, you know, $1,000, something like that, whatever the cat had done. And he said, my cat knows better than to get sick, because for $10, I can get a sack, a brick, and a new cat. It's a little hard, but, you know, jeez. It's a funny visual.
Oh, yeah. My God.
He loved his cat, to be fair. You know, he's a definite cat person. He was just joking, but anyway. So, yeah.
Too funny.
Yeah, and get back to the book thing. Thanks again, Joel, for the Zitz comic book you gave me there. Joel passed on. If anyone not familiar with Zitz, Jim Boardman is the author, and a guy named Jerry Scott is the artist. And
no, you get Zitz. That backwards.
I got it backwards.
Yeah, Jerry Scott writes it, and Jim Boardman. Well, they both write it, and Jim Boardman draws it. No, Jerry Scott draws Baby Blues.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. I think. Anyway, yeah, the line work in it is beautiful, and you know it's worth checking out if you haven't seen. I'm sure everybody listening has probably seen Zitz at one point or another. It's still in the funny section in the paper and that sort of thing. Yeah. I know funny section. I'm an old man. Anyway, so he gave me a copy of the Pierced one. One of Jeremy's friends, the main character of Zitz, has a friend whose name's Pierce, and he has all these piercings all over his face, and it's really interesting to see how far you can take the same gag throughout, you know, the entire book. It's pretty neat. Anyway,
No, I agree. It's a well done, and it's a nice little spot. I guess they call it like a close up on that particular character.
Yeah.
In the series. Yeah. So, Brian, what's been on your nightstand this week?
Not a whole heck of a lot. The way work's been going for me, I haven't had a ton of time to read, but today I did just pick up the second book of Game of Thrones.
Okay.
So I'm itching to get into that, because I don't really feel like waiting for April 1st to roll around to see everything as it comes out on HBO. So
right on.
That's been the main read for right now, outside of, you know, general webcomics that I follow all the time. And I am going to be getting into the Walking Dead series very soon.
Cool.
I have those set aside waiting for me, so... I'm itching to get started there.
Yeah, I actually have a comic series that I'm going to be picking up on the iPhone, recommended by Scott Johnson this morning on the morning stream, and it is a new Transformer series from IDW. And normally, I've been holding off on a lot of these digital purchases that I want to make, because I don't have an iPad, and I know that an iPad will be the thing that I want to read comics on. I've read a couple comics on my phone, and it was okay. It was a good experience, but I mean, it was a very specific situation of being in bed at night, very close to the phone, you know, as opposed to trying to like sit or, you know, sit in a chair and read it or whatever.
Sure.
And, so yeah, it's written by Mike Morheim. from Blizzard, from World of Warcraft fame. And his other passion, of course, is comic books. So he wrote this series called Autocracy. And it takes place on Cybertron before, I think, the big wars take place. And it sounds like a really interesting read. And the artwork is really cool. So yeah, you guys can check that out. And it's only 99 cents an issue.
Cool.
So I might drop the $4 and pick up all four of those. Chris Menson, sorry, thank you. What did I say?
Mike Menson.
I said Mike Morheim, didn't I?
Or Morheim, yeah.
Yeah, he's the other guy at Blizzard. You can tell that I'm not a gamer.
And you tell the gamers who are, they're like, you're wrong.
Yes. Chris Menson, sorry about that. Yes, he's the guy that that wrote that. So yeah.
Can you get Comicology on your Mac though? The one on your laptop?
That's a good question.
I don't know. I think so. I probably can. But see, that's the thing. I've been doing a lot of research this week, and I've been trying to read news articles and stuff like that. And I don't like reading on my laptop. Laptop is equated with work in my brain. Mm. You know, the only time that I don't associate working when I'm using my laptop is when it's hooked up to my 46-inch television in the living room and I'm watching a movie.
Sure.
That's the only time, because it's like usually clamshelled shut. It's kind of in my entertainment system. I'm not thinking about it like a laptop because there's something going full screen. But yeah, I don't enjoy reading on the laptop at all. I really would like to pick up one of these new fancy iPads that are announced now. Looks like they're coming out, or at least being announced next Wednesday.
Yeah, that's 7th. What I'm waiting for.
Yeah. They're going to be pretty. I don't know if I can afford one, but they're going to be really nice and shiny.
Be interesting to see how that interacts with the stylus you showed me a while ago. I've seen a couple versions of that same sort of smaller tip stylus for drawing.
Yeah.
And if they have an app that actually gives you like pressure sensitivity, even though it's only 200 layers, it could turn the new iPad into a nice little workstation for a lot of people. So.
Oh, definitely. Traveling workstation for sure. Yeah. For sure. Well, I guess in the essence of time, we should probably move on to music. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I had going on here was just kind of a re-mention of that Making Comics podcast, which is something that I've been listening to. And Daniel Lisk, the author of The Worm World Saga, is one of the co-hosts on that show. And mm-hmm. I've been really enjoying listening to that. And if you'd like The Worm World Saga, dear listeners, then you can listen to the artist talk about it, which is, it just makes it that much more interesting, I found, having read it and then listening to him talking about the process and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was great. So Peyton, what have you been listening to this week?
Just odds and ends, but Arcade Fire. I'm a big fan of their stuff. My roommate back in college saw them play here at Halifax Pop Explosion, and he said it was the best band he'd ever seen play live, and I didn't get a chance to see them live then, but he brought the album in, and it was really good. Funeral was the first album, and then the second album is Neon Bible, which is a good follow-up. And now they're on their third album, Suburbs. And but a lot of people know they won the Grammy Album of the Year, all that stuff last year. But anyway, my wife was saying the other day how she heard their new song on the radio, Sprawl 2, Mountains Beyond Mountains, and she really liked it, so we ended up downloading it from the iTunes there, and it's really, really fun little tune, and at least the rhythm. There's a neat live version online too, with them playing at a live concert and Cyndi Lauper playing backup, which is kind of fun.
Nice.
And again, the 2-year-old, he gets a kick out of dancing to it in the kitchen, which is kind of funny to watch too. So yeah, Arcade Fire, fun for adults and 2-year-olds.
Nice. Cool. Nice.
How about you, Brian? What are you listening to?
This week I've been listening to the Minecraft soundtrack on Spotify. I play Minecraft. I played it quite a bit last year. Had my own multiplayer server running at home and had a bunch of friends in there playing. But I always play with the music off because I had podcasts playing in the background and that sort of thing. Took a break, came back to it, started playing in the last week or so, and decided I'd turn the music on and listen to it. And it's really cool. It's very relaxing. Music. It's very different from your typical video game soundtrack. So if you've got access to it, especially if you have Spotify, check it out. It's a great listen. Great way to start the day, great way to end the day.
So I'm not
mellow.
I'm not familiar with Spotify. What is that?
Spotify, I don't know if you guys have Spotify access in Canada.
I think we do. Chat room, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Spotify is something that we can access in Canada.
Spotify is basically a combination of Pandora, brings in iTunes, and it's streaming music. Okay. So you can sign up for a free account on Spotify's website, download it to your personal computer or your Mac, and it's got thousands and thousands, if not millions, of tracks that you can go in and just stream. And you can make your own playlists and everything. If you use the free version, then you get commercials every once in a while, maybe a pop-up on the screen. Or you can pay, I pay right now $10 a month, and that allows me to stream unlimited music to my iPhone. And it also allows me to save any of my playlists for offline mode. So if I don't have an internet connection or a 3G connection, anything that's in offline save mode is saved to my phone locally, and I can play it as much as I want.
Oh, cool.
It's a really cool way to check out music, because for me what was happening was I was having a hard time deciding on, you know, okay, I want to buy some albums this week. Which one do I want to get? You know, what tracks do I want to get? That sort of thing. Spotify just negates that whole issue and allows me to just kind of have access to anything and everything that's out there.
Yeah, I guess the old idea of selling albums and everything has gone to the wayside, and a lot of bands are making their money in the live shows and merchandising or whatever, I guess. So.
Yeah.
And the artists all get a cut for, you know, each, they get a certain amount each time their track or their album is streamed, that sort of thing. So they're all, you know, getting actual money from you using a streaming service like Spotify.
Oh, good. That's good to know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is not yet available in Canada.
That's too bad.
Yeah. The smarter than me people in the chat room have thus informed me. I went looking Google, but they beat me to it. So yeah, it's not coming yet. GIS Gamer says that it might be coming soonish, but she doesn't appear to know either. So that's too bad, because that would have been a really cool thing to check out.
Yeah, it's an awesome service.
Yeah, it sounds it. I mean, you guys talking about it when I was on Tadpoolery there sounded like a really cool thing, especially with, is it Nick that is just kind of constantly sharing his playlists with everybody and just kind of always picking up new music? I mean, I rely on Chad for that. He just kind of sends me emails. Dude, listen to this. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, Nick's great about that. You know, he sent me the first day I signed up, well, I reactivated my Spotify account and told him, he sent me 11 albums within 45 minutes. And they all go to my Spotify inbox, and I can just go through them, and they're saved there right now. And any that I really like, I save to my own playlists. You know, if there's just certain tracks, I can pull just those certain tracks and forget the rest of it. It's very customizable. It ties into Facebook, so you can share with all your Facebook friends, and they can share with you. You can subscribe to people's playlists, that sort of thing. It's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. The social networking of the site seems like a good idea, because it would help to offset the promotions cost for a band, you know, instead of them doing marketing. It makes it easier for you to do it yourself while they're still making some money from it. So, yeah. Cool. Absolutely.
Is Ardeo similar, Brian?
Ardeo? I'm not sure. I haven't heard of that before.
Okay. Because GIS Gamer, again, in the chat room, thinks that it's a very similar service, and that is available in Canada.
Okay.
So, same sort of thing. Yeah, well, we can move on to our one email this week.
Email.
Yeah, Chad's not here. I'll have to dig that clip up and play something and see if I can take the time to edit something in. But yeah,
email. Go Leafs.
Nice. He's gonna love that. Oh boy. Email this week is actually going to be sponsored by me. If you don't know, I'm a webcomic cartoonist. And I draw Starcrossed at starcrossedonline.com. And among other things, I also host the bandwidth for this show and other shows that I do. So I'm sponsoring the email because I'm cool like that. And I'm glad to bring some goodness to the listening ears of people that both read the comic and listen to the podcast. So Starcrossed.
Thanks, Joel.
You're welcome. I have to stop that before I start to sound like Jenna Marbles. As hilarious as she may be, I can't pull it off. So yeah, starcrossedonline.com is where you can find my comic and basically everything else that I'm doing online. And if you'd like to email the show, the address is thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. If you have something to say, we'd love to hear from you. Send everything in as concise a form as you can. If you ramble on, we will probably cut you down unless you're really cool, and at which point we will just, you know, let you ramble off the cuff. Same with an MP3 voicemail. Same address, thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Keep it under 1 minute if at all possible. Normally I would say keep it clean, but I don't care. So yeah, I am not going to take the time to bleep you. So know that if your mother hears it, she may, you know, ground you for life. And our email this week comes from Denver Brubaker. And he says, I listened to the cafe the other night. Like I said, I loved the show. I like the structure and the flow. I subscribe to the page in Reader, so I'll keep up to date better from now on. Denver. Denver happens to be one of my co-hosts on the Comics Coast to Coast and is the artist behind Tales of a Checkered Man, another webcomic that you can find at thecheckeredman.com. So I thought that was a nice compliment from a fellow podcaster who enjoys the show.
It has a very cool comic as well.
So. Oh, it's a great comic.
Yeah.
So fun. Do you read that, Brian?
No, I don't. I will have to check that out.
You will like it. From what little I know about you, I think you will enjoy The Checkered Man.
Cool. I will definitely look that up.
Yeah. Then. And subscribing is always a good idea.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, you can throw the blog into your favorite RSS reader. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. There's all kinds of different ways to keep up with what's happening with the Citadel Cafe. And we can run it all down for you at the end of the show. And that brings us into our last section, which is the Internet Minute. Some articles and fun things that we've found on the interweb this week. And I'm going to keep rolling right into mine. And it's really simple. It is a fold-out cover of a Marvel event by Scotty Young. I'm all about comics this week. I must have been kind of clicking all these links on Twitter this weekend, and they were all comic related stuff. So basically what Scotty Young has done is a Avengers versus X-Men fold out poster / cover, and it is all baby characters.
And it's very, 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 very well done.
It is hilarious. You know, you've got, it looks like Emma Frost poking Daredevil in the eye. Beast has got a sticky arrow on his forehead. Storm is shocking people. Iron Man is upside down, taking his armor off to show off his diaper. There's two Hulks, and there looks like they're throwing tantrums. Like, it's really, really, really well
done. And Colossus is now Juggernaut, which I didn't know.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
Colossus?
That.
Colossus?
Is Colossus really? Is now the Juggernaut. Yeah. Well, I guess the idea is Juggernaut, the crystal that formed Juggernaut, is possessed by a demon or something, and Kane, who originally was a Juggernaut, was a little more like-minded. So I guess it's sort of like a Venom sort of idea. Like, they sort of like similar goals in mind, so that's why you know, he was able to do what he did. But Colossus is a lot more self-sacrificing, so I think it's going to be a little more at odds. So it'll be interesting to see how that entire thing pans out. Anyway,
interesting. Do you see Nightcrawler here anywhere? I'm looking for him, but I don't see him.
No, I don't see him there. I know the person Storm is zapping apparently is her husband, Black Panther, which I didn't realize they've been married. I've been a little bit out of the loop lately with Marvel, so
yeah, I haven't been keeping up either. I really like the there's a really cool Thor moment happening where he's right in the middle, and he's still got that cocky look in his face, but he's squaring up. It looks like Cyclops for a giant bash on the head with a hammer.
Mm. Yeah, and the propeller on top of his helmet just makes it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is just so killer. Good.
Well, Scotty's been doing these baby characters for a while there for different events. I think he did some buttons or something or collector cards for one of the cons a couple of years ago. And then he also did the a similar style Magneto in another pose. And then someone took that drawing of Scotty and turned it into a 3D character, which would be an awesome cartoon. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. No, and that was on like the CG website forums and stuff. Yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah.
It's a high-end 3D. Those are the websites like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about you, Peyton? What's been filling your internet world this week?
Oh, just a couple little things there. There's the one website. I was going through some of my old emails, and an animator friend of ours, Bianca, she has a long time ago, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, sent me this link, lively.blogspot.com, lively.blogspot.com, and it is an amazing animation resource. It has lots of YouTube links there for documentaries on different animation-related, directors and artists and stuff like that, and filmmakers, as well as behind-the-scenes stuff from a lot of films, and a lot of pencil tests and stuff like that. So if you're looking for any information or, you know, just neat things, model packs, stuff like that to check out, it's a good starting point for sure.
Yeah, and if you are an animator, if you like animation, if you're an animation geek, if you're into comics or anything like that, I will warn you now.
It's a time suck.
If you plan on getting anything done today, don't go. Wait until you're done your goals, then go look, because I lost a couple hours.
Yeah, quite easily. And another note, I was looking at the drawn.ca website, and they had a link there for papercraft. I do papercraft myself, but this thing is just, wow, just blows your mind. It's the link for it is in the show notes. It's this woman does anatomical cross sections, so she'll take use photographs of anatomical structures, and then she'll use quilled paper, which is basically cutting like paper into a 1 centimeter wide strip, and you're rolling it. And she's using pins and stuff to put it in place. So she's doing the entire structure of like a cross section of the brain and the skull and the ears and everything. And it's all done with paper. And it's beautiful. It really, really is quite nice to look at. And I can't imagine how much she's, you know, marketing these things for. But they're quite nice. And the last little note is a few weeks ago, I was at a local farmer's market. And there's a guy named Alex Hansen, H-A-N-S-S-E-N. Anyway, he's a wood turner, third generation wood turner, and he does some really nice wooden bowls and stuff. And he also has this really cool, surfboard he made out of wood, which I thought was worth noting because, you know, I've tried surfing a couple years ago, and it is hard. I could not get up on the board at all, and that's with the modern stuff. So I can't imagine how difficult it would be to surf on the old fashioned wooden ones. And it's always neat to see. Oh, you guys still there?
Yeah, yep. Still here.
Okay,
still
here, man. No, I just had something pop up on my screen. Sorry. Anyway, yeah. So, surfing, can't do it. This guy makes the boards, so I assume he can surf. Anyway, so we're checking out his stuff. It's at henningshapes.com is the website. Again, it's in the show notes. So henningshapes.com. Anyway, yeah. And how about you, Brian? You got any internet minute stuff you want to share?
You know, the only article I had the chance to read this morning was Minecraft. Mojang, the makers behind Minecraft, actually hired a bunch of independent programmers that worked on the multiplayer server program called Bucket. And this is basically what's used by the majority of the Minecraft community to play multiplayer online Minecraft. These guys did it for free for, you know, a year or two now. They got to the point where the stuff they were putting out was so good that Mojang just went out and hired them and gave four of their top programmers jobs. So it's really a cool thing to see these independent guys start up Mojang and then continue that by hiring more independent programmers that have put the time and effort into something that they are helping to build. Hire these guys and pay them a salary for doing it. You know, it's a really cool way to see a hobby become a living.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. It's always nice to see, you know, larger companies do that when they can, you know, expand and, you know, either not buy the company or, but at least, you know, hire them out.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Well, I guess we can go right into our iTunes reviews, I guess, just to kind of keep things rolling along here. One of the best ways for our podcast to reach new listeners is via the reviews in the iTunes store. If you like the show, give us a rating, leave us a review, and we might share your thoughts on the next episode, just like Jeff Harper, who left us a wonderful 5-star review. And Jeff said, "Great to find a locally produced podcast that made me laugh. Professional and well done, covering a wide range of topics that anyone anywhere could enjoy." Jeff, we thank you for your kind words and your 5-star review. So anybody out there that's taking in the podcast, please go rate us on the iTunes store. We happened to be new and noteworthy again in the Canadian Personal Journal section this week. So we thank you for that.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. Please continue to share because it's a fun way for new people to find a new podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's the end of the show. If you like to follow up on all of our wonderful show notes, you can do so by hitting the blog at thecitadelcafe.com. And we have the same handle across every social network, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, The Citadel Cafe, all one word. And we are just 7 likes away from our Facebook page having immortality and a vanity URL. So please go like us on Facebook so we can nab the Citadel Cafe there as well. Our show notes are written by Jocelyn Moffat of the Gamers In Podcast. If you're a gamer, check out Jocelyn and her co-host Ryan over at gamersinpodcast.com. We thank you very much for your contribution to our little show. I really like the Gamers In. It's a fun little show about gaming, and I'm not even a big gamer. So it's definitely an entertaining thing to check out if that's something that is in your wheelhouse. Brian, I'm not sure if you have room for another gaming podcast in your rotation.
Oh, I would totally take it because I'm always looking to fill in gaps, you know. I have all these certain shows that I follow, and when there's not a new episode up, I've got to find something to fill in the blank. So
nice.
The more podcasts I have, the happier I am. So I will definitely keep listening and check those out.
Fantastic. Yeah, they're I think they're just one episode ahead of us. I think they just finished their 10th. Cool. Yeah, just the other week. So they're about the same age. We're all in the same kind of under 20 crowd.
Yeah, no,
in our podcast livelihoods, right?
Yeah, that's really cool though.
Cool. Well, I guess before I just close out the show, I want to thank Brian for filling in for Mr. Merlin at the last minute and give him a chance to plug anything that he wants to plug.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Joel. I appreciate you having me on, and it was great to chat with you and Peyton. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Bryvost. It's Bryvost. You can find me on Facebook, just Brian Provost on Facebook, and tadpoolery.com. That's the weekly Tadpool podcast that we do. And we're actually going to be recording this week's episode in about 45 minutes. So,
nice.
That streams right now. It streams every Friday following the instance on vtwproductions.com.
Fantastic.
You can find us on iTunes and the website. So,
yeah, it's a good show. I really enjoy it.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, thanks. No, we'll definitely have you on again, too.
Yeah, no, I'd love to come back. It's funny, like, everybody on there is just such genuine people that we didn't even really talk about what the show is about.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of the way it goes, is we get on these tangents and we just roll with it. And, you know, it's a conversation between friends is ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, that's the most important thing. I mean, I think that's the most authentic thing about podcasting, is that if you get too wrapped up in, you know, your show notes and what you're supposed to be talking about, then it gets very formulaic and boring for people. And I mean, sometimes rat holes are half the fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Or finding your way out.
Yeah.
And
unless you drop your foot into it and break your ankle.
Jeez. That's a good point, Peyton.
Morbid. No more Games of Thrones for you, sir. Yes. Well, speaking of your paper craft, Peyton, where can people find you online?
I can be found at cardboardtreehouse.com and Twitter at Peyton Francis, P-A-T-O-N Francis, and the Facebook and the Google Plus and, you know, stuff like that. I'm around.
And as I mentioned before, you can follow me and all of my work at starcrossedonline.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter and Google Plus and also Facebook. But the easiest thing is just to search my name, Joel Duggan. You shall find me, and I shall add you, and all shall be well.
And thank you again, Brian. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks again. I appreciate it, guys.
Well, you guys have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Please pick two.
Are we going to talk about the hat for poop?
The hat for poop?
Crap, we didn't even mention it on the air.
No. We can put it off because, like, Peyton obviously needs more practice.
Yeah, there's that. And the dwarves just came out today. Peyton, Chad set up a round robin tournament for the Gamers Inn and the Citadel Cafe. And is that the acronym, Chad?
Yeah.
The hat for poop? Yeah. See if I can find it here. So it's the Hero Academy Tournament for Persons on Opposing Podcasts. Hat for poop. It's great.
I got hat, right? And I went, oh, I got hat. I got to come up with something. I almost had hats off, please. Almost had hats off, please. And I said, well, what's that? But hat for poop, just it makes it sound like it's very, like I just can't, it's accidental.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but it's not.
That's a trophy. Yeah. I don't want to win.
Nice. You've won the hat for poop.
I'm not wearing that, man.
Wait a minute. Where's that been?